Welcome, everyone, to the Comedy Sports Podcast, starring your host, Christine Rolo Capriolo, and today, my very best friend, Mike the Mouth Kouth!
Hey, everybody, welcome to today's Comedy Sports Podcast. I'm Christine Rolo Capriolo, and today I'm really excited. I've got Mike the Mouth Kouth. Mike Kouth, thanks for coming in today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Very excited to have you here today.
Yes.
You are Mr. Comedy Sports. You've been there quite a while, and I'm really excited to hear about it.
Yeah.
First, though, tell me, where are you from?
I am from Milwaukee,
mm-hmm.
So nothing too exciting
right
there, but... Born there, then moved, and still live now in Menominee Falls.
Okay, so suburb of Milwaukee.
Yes,
got
yes.
it. Okay. Yeah. And how old were you when you found out you were funny?
I would say, you know how like your parents will tell you stories
right.
of like when they found out you were funny?
Yeah.
I think I was 4 years old.
Yeah.
And I went to the doctor.
Okay.
To get in there. And... the doctor just asked me what my name was,
uh-huh.
and I said Elmer Fudd, and I thought that was so funny, but the doctor didn't think it was funny.
He
didn't think that I knew who I was.
Oh, no.
So he was like, no, but seriously, who are you?
Stop it.
And I was just like, I'm Elmer.
Oh.
I'm Elmer Fudd, because like I thought that was funny. But
is.
Then my mom's like, no, he's four, he's being silly.
He's being funny.
Yes. And the doctor is like, I don't know. Does he know who he is or not? So that like sticks out in my head.
Oh my God.
Of at a very early age, I liked messing with adults.
Okay.
And that just kind of carried. Like Looney Tunes, Muppets were huge.
Those are big for
me.
You.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So growing up, being over the top, being silly like that. Was something that I did from a very early age. My sister was a huge influence on me. She's yeah. 3 years older than me.
Okay.
So once I came along, she had someone to play with.
Mm-hmm.
And she had like a very active imagination. So she always had these ideas.
Uh-huh.
I remember we would play Mother and Mother, which was...
Mother and Mother.
Just two mothers, what they did in their day-to-day life.
Oh.
And then, like, I was like, well, I don't want to keep being a mom. So she's like, okay, well, we'll play father and father.
It wasn't mother, father,
no.
But it was mother, mother,
yes.
or father, father.
But they did. So I remember playing father and father because we left the house.
Okay.
We walked outside like
uh-huh.
we were going to work. And then we just wrestled on the lawn because that's what dads do. They go off to work and they
wrestle.
Yeah.
So when you were a kid... you were trying to be funny and silly and entertaining.
Yes.
What did you want to be
yeah.
when you grew up? Did you want to do that?
I wanted to be involved in cartoons because
oh, okay.
I always liked watching what was on TV and then like trying to draw it later
yeah.
and doing like storyboards. So
uh-huh.
My dad sold paper.
Uh-huh.
So he would get like kind of older paper and
yeah.
just random bits of paper that he would bring home. And I would just constantly draw on them. And I would draw like... yeah, just like stories, and
mm-hmm.
then I'd post them, and I'd show my mom. Like she would have to sit there as I showed her. Like, and then this guy says this, and
yeah.
this guy says that. So that's what I thought I was gonna do
okay.
when I was little. I'm like, somehow I'm gonna be involved in making cartoons.
Yeah. Well, you are a fantastic artist. I was just sharing with Kyle, my wonderful sound
yes.
guy and all around amazing
Bravo.
Person with
here,
my
here,
podcast.
Kyle. Very good.
Yes, I was just telling him. Right before we started recording, that you are an amazing artist. And
thank
I
you.
Remember doing shows with you, and you'll take the paper on the sidelines where we write down suggestions, and you'll draw whoever's on stage really quickly in
yeah.
a cartoon-like form.
Yeah.
And that's I'm an artist and an art teacher. I can't draw that way. I'm envious of it. I love
oh,
it.
I thank you.
I think
I
it's
thank
fantastic.
You.
So
yeah.
you were hoping for that in your career.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but I never, like, because I never had any, I mean, I took, like, art classes.
Okay.
But outside of that in high school,
mm-hmm.
I didn't have any like other training.
Okay.
So it was all just kind of like what I saw. And unfortunately, like I can't draw realistic things.
Okay.
I struggled to draw like any sort, even a cartoon car.
Yeah.
I can't quite get because I only wanted to draw the things I liked to draw.
Yeah.
So I always just focused in on that.
And the
so
people.
And the people. Yeah. Animals and people were the big things that I liked.
Now, you went to UWM for a bit. What did you study there? Were you studying art?
I didn't go to UWM.
Oh, I thought you did. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I went to UW Waukesha for a little bit and just general studies there. But at that time, I didn't think, like, I graduated high school and I thought, okay, I'm not going to go to college.
Yeah.
I'm going to explore something else, find something. And that summer, like, I didn't.
Yeah.
So my mom was, you know, encouraging me to further my education. If I didn't know what I was going to do, might as well do that. So I said, yep, okay. And I went to UW Waukesha, but it was just general studies.
Okay.
Nothing really grabbed me. So then I took time to, like, start working. I was doing comedy sports at that time. And I was doing a couple other, like, odd jobs here and there. Then I was like, well, I'm going to go for TV and video production at MATC.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there. And they have a great program.
Mm-hmm.
I just, at the age that I was at, I bumped heads with people who were, like, in charge.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to make funny things.
Sure.
And I did make funny things. Yeah. And they're like, well, there'll be time to, this was, and it wasn't on purpose. It wasn't meant to be rude. It was meant to, like, try and steer me down the right path. But I was told, like, there'll be time to be creative later.
Huh.
You know, and I didn't take well to that.
Right.
I was like, nah, I'm going to be creative
now. I'm
going to
do it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I always found a way to do the assignment, but in my own sort of kind of tweaked way a little bit.
In the Mike Kauth way.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, now back up. You said you were already doing comedy sports. How did you come to comedy sports? How did you hear about it? How did this happen for you?
I had seen one show before I took classes.
Okay.
I'd seen a show when I was 16 years old, I believe. A family that was friends with my family.
Mm-hmm.
We all got together and we went out to dinner at Brett Favre's Steakhouse.
All right.
When that existed.
When that was there.
Yeah. And the night was like, I think we were going to the 10 o'clock. No, it probably was the 7:30 show. And so we had dinner beforehand. Then we went to there. But while we were in the restaurant, I just coincidentally, Kurt Scholer was there.
Okay.
Right. So
he's my comedy sports improv crush. He's amazing.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yes,
yeah.
He's amazing.
And my first interaction without knowing who he was, I just saw him and he had like a comedy sports shirt on, I believe. And the dad of the other family like stopped and he's like, hey, we're
Kurt
going
Scholer.
There. We're going there, you know? And he's like, oh, and he comes up to the table. And he shows us like kind of this magic trick with these wine corks. Like he has them and he does this flipping thing with them. And he's like, if you show me after the show, if you can figure out how to do this, let me know. You know, and he was just very like engaging and very nice.
Yes.
And it's like, wow. So we go there.
For that guy.
And the dad of the other family like figured it out how to do it.
Okay.
So he's like after the show running over to him like, hey. So that was like the first show that I saw. And I didn't know what improv was. I knew nothing. I just like watch this show happen in front of me. And
was this on Jefferson or was this?
This was on Jefferson.
Okay.
Yeah. And just loved it.
Yeah.
But then didn't think about it.
Okay.
Like for, I guess, a year because I was, 16 then? So when I was 17, I was working at a pharmacy and I enjoyed that, going to high school. And I was doing a media studies program.
Okay.
And I really liked creating and stuff. And I thought, like, man, I wish there was another outlet that would allow me to perform. And I was like, oh yeah, that comedy sports place. So I just pulled out the phone book when I got home and just called them up.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, how do I get to work there?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, like wait staff or,
yeah.
And I was like, no, I like want to be one of the people on stage.
Yeah.
And just coincidentally, John Polesnik, who was the 101 teacher for my experience, like he was like in the office and they're like, oh, we actually have the teacher here. So they just handed him the phone, you know? And he's like, oh, hey, what's up? And I was like, oh, I'd like to take the class.
Yeah.
I'm 17 right now. I'm about to turn 18.
Yeah.
And he's like, and it just so happened, like, what was it? Like, the day after the class was my birthday.
Okay.
So they're like, that's fine. Just
so you
show
didn't
up.
Start in high school league. You just
I
went
didn't.
Right to the workshops.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was it. And it was about, just coincidentally, it was starting up in a week.
Okay.
So I happened to call. They're like, yep, come in next week.
Nice.
You know, bring a check and you're in.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what happened. Like, I just showed up and just started learning. Like I said, John Polesnik was my 101 teacher and just very, like, supportive and laid back. And at that time, it was so different because you had such a mixture of different people taking those workshops.
Absolutely.
Some of them were like, oh, I just want to be able to speak in front of a crowd.
Right.
And someone was just kind of like, oh, my friend thinks I'm funny.
Yeah.
And one guy was like, he wanted to get better at stand-up, like mm-hmm. crowd work.
Okay.
But it wasn't like this thing of, oh, we want to be pro players.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like, we want to do this to better some element uh-huh. of our life. You know, like we'll take 101 and then probably disappear.
Right.
You know?
So what year are we talking? Where are we here?
This is 99.
99?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So I had turned 18 in 99 and then started taking those workshops.
Okay.
I've been a part of it ever since.
Ever since.
Yeah.
So you rose quickly in the ranks. I remember you and Dave Tooney
yes.
together. He
yeah.
must have been in the same class.
He was one after me.
One after you?
Yes.
Okay, because
yeah.
for some reason, everyone, well, of my age and around
oh, yeah.
Comedy Sports, remembers you two together, coming up together.
Yes.
At the
yeah.
same time. So, but you weren't in workshops long.
No.
Right?
No. By 2000, I had played a show.
Okay.
And back then, you used to do a certain set shows for free.
Right, like six shows before you
yeah.
got paid. Yeah,
yeah.
I remember.
So those six shows probably lasted
yeah.
like a year.
You know? Like, they stretched that out for you, okay?
Stretched it out, yeah. But like at that time, like Steve Scholler, who was phenomenal
yes,
for me.
Absolutely.
Just phenomenal in general, but like just really took me under his wing and showed me like a lot of elements to what comedy sports is, what it could be for me.
Yeah.
And he like moved me to the level 3 because there was beginner, intermediate, and advanced.
Right, right.
So he was like, I want you to go to advanced.
Yeah.
Like maybe after one session with him.
Yeah.
He's like, I want you to go to advanced, but I want you to also come to intermediate. So I was getting like 2 times a week I was going to rehearsals and practices and learning.
So you had John Pelesnik in your beginner.
Correct.
Steve Scholler in advanced. Who was
yeah.
your intermediate?
Initially, it was Dylan Bolin,
okay,
which is excellent. And then Eric Price took over
oh,
for
okay.
him.
Oh, okay, those guys. Okay,
yeah.
great.
So then after that, like there was a period of time where like Dave Tooney, myself, Matt Garness,
uh-huh.
we were in that advanced level.
Yeah.
And like Eric very nicely was just like, okay, you guys need to stop coming now. Because we were playing on the weekends and we were doing
right.
remotes
were,
here
yeah.
and there. I think the breaking point was we did this show where it was like the 3-ref show. Like Matt Tooney and I thought of this beforehand.
Okay.
We're like, what would be fun is if like Matt comes out as ref.
Yeah.
And then I'm sitting there and I kind of start heckling him a little bit. Being kind of like, you know, like I could do what you're doing.
Okay.
He's like, are you sure? And I think so. And he's like, well, does anyone here else think that they can ref? And then Tooney, who's been quiet the whole time, he just pops up.
And you guys
he's
are in like, the audience. You're not on the...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Dave and I are in the audience. And Dave's like, yeah, I'll do it. And he just takes off his shirt and he's wearing a ref shirt in the whistle.
I love it.
And then he starts in on the ref spiel and
yeah.
Matt's like, oh, you're pretty good. I was like, well, I wanted to do it. And they're like, get up here. So the three of us start reffing the show. And the problem is then that became the focus, you know? And it was just kind of like... That's not ideal, right?
Right.
For the comedy store. So it was just like that thing of like, we were at a point where now we were like experimenting with
yeah.
the format almost too much, where it's like, okay, like do that elsewhere while people are still training to
sure.
to learn. Yeah.
Like there's comedy sports that has its format.
Yes.
And then, but you've always been willing to push it and learn more
yeah.
and play more. So what other kinds of shows, like you were doing a show, forgive me, and my
you are forgiven.
Poor research here. I can't remember the name of it, but you
no,
did
okay.
wonderful videos with it. You had the film of like you guys doing the Wonder Years theme song beforehand.
Oh.
And that was a...
Yeah, that was the Gentleman's Hour.
The Gentleman's Hour.
Yes.
So
yeah.
you've done lots of other improv, but
yeah.
also written as well. So talk about
yeah.
some of your other... I mean, Comedy Sports got you in it, right? I
right.
mean, you're in the door, you're doing,
right.
you're taking classes, and suddenly you're like, don't go to class anymore. You're doing shows, you're doing
yeah.
remotes. But then you just kept pushing the format and played with other things. Talk about some of your other shows you've done.
There was early on, like after Dave Tooney and I
mm-hmm.
started with Comedy Sports and we were lucky enough where they were moving us ahead
yeah.
and giving us shows, we thought like we want to keep learning.
Yeah.
So Dave and I, we went down to Chicago.
Okay.
And we went through, at the time it was called Improv Olympic now.
Yeah, you're doing IO, right? Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we went through the workshops there, mm-hmm. and we were lucky enough where they were like, we want to put you guys on a house team. We want you guys to perform here at the theater. And we were like ecstatic about that.
Yeah.
And there were like amazing teachers down there. It's, you know, there's the short form and the long form.
Right.
And both to me are so rewarding and like they're the same, but they're so different.
Yeah.
And so it was like exploring this whole new world, but yet I knew the rules and I knew like the elements of support and all this. So that was really fun. And we did that we went through the classes for a year and then I think for like a little over a year, our team existed. It was mm-hmm. Children of God, and there were some really fun,
I remember the name.
Wonderful people. Yeah. And then we broke apart.
Sure.
And at that point, Dave was, I think he was just starting to do the Midnight Show.
Okay.
I think he had just been like the newest member of that. And I would guest with them every once in a while, and that's really fun. But I was looking to do something different.
Different, you know? Sure.
So a couple guys that I had gone up through the workshops with were Patrick Schmitz,
uh-huh.
who's kind of a local performer,
right.
playwright, and Tyler Kroll,
mm-hmm.
who mainly did stand-up and
sure.
some improv. And we always had like a good chemistry, and we were like, let's get together, let's
yeah.
start writing,
yeah.
let's start doing video, because they used to make video in high school, and
okay.
I used to make video in high school.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, we know how to edit, we know how
right.
to like tell these stories. So we just started building the sketches, and Johnny Beener, another local comedian, got on board, and we all just like fit really well.
Yeah.
And for like 5 or 6 years, that's what we did.
Sure.
So there was Comedy Sports, and then there was also The Gentleman's Hour for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was really just a great time of creativity in my life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you've continued that as you did go to LA for a brief period.
I did. Yeah.
And came back.
Yeah. That was really fun because that was, you know, you get to a point where you want to try something even more, like just keep, you know, growing and
yeah.
learning and everything. So I went out there and I learned at the UCB Theater.
Okay.
And that was excellent. And I got to play with Old Milwaukee while I was out there, which is Kurt Scholer,
yes.
Eric Price,
Peter Albert,
Tom Clark, Dave Tooney.
Yes.
And Brian Allman.
So a bunch of people that did Comedy Sports Milwaukee who have since moved to
Correct.
LA are doing
yes.
Old Milwaukee out there.
Yeah. And that's just a wonderful, you know, island of misfit toys kind
yes.
of a thing.
LA is like a little Milwaukee in
yeah.
the improv, you know, scene
yeah.
part of it, right?
Definitely. Definitely. And that was sort of like, I always kind of saw it as that wonderful progression where, you know, like Comedy Sports felt like my high school education.
Yeah.
And then IO was kind of like, okay, well, this is college.
Okay.
And then UCB was like my master's.
Your master's degree.
You know? Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just like, because it's all within the same realm.
Sure.
But it's always just these different challenges and these different hurdles and all
mm-hmm.
this wonderful information.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
How has improv changed your everyday life? Like, how has it just changed how you think and...
It has made me much more open to take risks
mm-hmm.
and be okay in any situation.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like leaning into it as opposed to leaning away from it.
Right.
Being on stage and living in the moment it feels so freeing
mm-hmm.
that to try and bring that into my actual life as opposed to like kind of, well, all right, I'll be done with work at 4:30, so I'll just wait until 4:30. It's like, no, like, what's happening right now?
Yeah.
How can I exist?
Live in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just, like, supporting people.
Yeah.
It just within, like, conversation even, of just, like, listening to people and giving them that, like, support of, like, not just, like, listening, but leading them into, like, even more story or more
right.
detail. And so I think it's made me better socially.
Sure.
And it's made me feel much more confident in who I am and what I do.
Well, talk about your stage presence. You've always been very comfortable. And I like that you just said it's made you better socially, because I think that's something people don't really hit on when I ask them that question. You're
yeah.
right. I mean, it just makes us able to communicate better and you know, in different situations.
Yeah.
So you're on stage, or right before you get on stage, do you get nervous? Do you have like a, you know, like a warm up for your brain to do that?
Yeah. I always am nervous before a performance.
Okay.
No matter what it is.
Yeah.
And there was, I'm trying to think where I heard it. Maybe Eric Price mentioned it to me of just like, it'll be more nerve-wracking when you're not nervous, you know, like before a show. Like you want to be able to use those nerves and that kind of, because it's like you're nervous, but it's also mixed with a level of like excitement to kind of get out there.
Yeah.
And once you do it a lot, like you start feeling more comfortable on stage, which is kind of an odd element to it, you know. And when you're not there, you're just kind of waiting sometimes to get back up there.
Yeah.
And beforehand, before a show, I think the most important thing is to connect with the people that you're about to do that show with.
Right.
Because that, to me, that's the most important thing of just like making sure that we're all at least, I was going to say about at least in the same book, but like you want to be like on the same page as best as possible. And you want to be able to walk out there and know like, I want everyone to feel like I'm going to have their back, and I want to feel like everyone is going to have my back. And regardless of what happens out there, we'll be together and we succeed together and we fail together. And regardless of what happens, you know, we're there for each other.
Now, how do you do that with someone you haven't played with? Like, you have had the experience of being in the Midnight Show with a group. You've had the experience of doing the Gentleman's Hour.
Yeah.
You played Old Milwaukee in L.A.
Yeah.
How do you do that when you show up and there's someone new and you don't know them? And that's, I mean, that's something, I mean, it's improv and we all know the games and the rules of the game and we can play them, but it is a huge difference. A show is so much better when the people know each other and you know each other's strengths and weaknesses. And so how do you do that with a new person? You show up, you're on the lineups and boom, you're playing with, you know, Charlie Schwachelberger.
Yeah, who's very good.
And how do you do that? How do you make him know you've got his back? And how do you feel he's got your back?
Yeah, if I see someone that I don't know, it's sort of a goal to make sure that I have at least one conversation with this person beforehand. Of just like making sure that they know, be it with a smile, be it with a laugh at what they're saying, just something that they know that I'm on their side.
Yeah.
That we're all, because that's like, comedy sports has that element of like team versus team, but really we're all one big team.
Sure.
Kind of competing.
Which the audience doesn't really, they're not in on sometimes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And because that's part of the show.
Right. That's like, the shtick. Yeah. Like it's a competition, but it's not.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, man. So I think like, because it's in Milwaukee, more so than probably any place, like we focus on like volunteers a lot, where we get people who have no improv background or no performing experience.
And, come on up.
Yeah. And the goal with that is always to make them feel good.
Right.
Like the scene should succeed and they should be the one feeling that, oh, I got those laughs.
Yeah.
I did that. I made that work.
Right.
So much of that transfers like to playing with new people, I think, where it's just, and I'm not saying like, oh, they're like volunteers.
No,
but
no, I don't
that
mean
support.
That either. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's yeah. Like, 'cause you want to feel that connection with someone when you're on stage.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like, it's a big deal when, like for anybody to get on stage, 'cause so many people have no desire to do it.
Right.
And that's one thing, like, I think it's important for like anyone to remember, but especially when you first start out, it's like, You're the professional here. You're the one performing.
Yeah.
Like you're doing it. You know what to do. The audience is just sitting there waiting to see what happens. So there's no right or wrong in those moments. It's like whatever you give them is the right thing.
Yeah. And how do you get an audience on your side? We've played for rough crowds before.
True.
How do you pull them in? How do you make them know this is it? This is going to be awesome.
I think that comes across within confidence. Like, I think if you're doing things that you find funny and you're following your instincts, it'll land. It'll win them over. If you back down, then they're probably going to win. You know what I mean? Like, if you give them a reason to not pay attention to you, then they won't. But if you just, like, keep confident, keep big, just focus on your scene partner and making things work. Like, it'll succeed. I would say, like, 8 out of 10 times, like, that'll work, you know? Because sometimes, you know, I did a show with two improvisers, Matt Garnis and Dave Lane. Mm-hmm. And it was probably the roughest show. We did like a really fun, great show in the morning. Sure. And then in the afternoon, we went to this other show. Uh-huh. And interestingly enough, they both were like involved in marketing.
Okay.
And the first one was like, just people were so happy that we were there and just like so thankful and so ready to laugh. And then the next one we went to was in the back of this restaurant mm-hmm. where they just had like sort of a half wall separating the party from the rest of the restaurant.
Right.
So a lot of noise coming in. They had all been drinking for like 3+ hours. So they're all three sheets to the wind, right, just stumbling around, celebrating. And then it's our time to go on, but and they don't want to introduce us or anything. They're like, just start your show.
Just go. Oh, God.
So we start, but like the whole party, they bring out the food. So people are going through the buffet line. And it's just like, boy, like, what's going on here? Like, but we didn't back down. We just hit them hard, mm-hmm. did our best. And we had like a group of people then that started coming over and watching it.
Sure.
So even though there was like probably 200 people there, you know, and like
we had four
50
of them.
Yeah. Four strong fans. But that's the thing, is you find those people mm-hmm. who want to laugh and be there, and you make that the best experience for them possible.
Well, and those are different shows. I mean, where people from sports are hired to go to like a Christmas party for this bank business or, you know, and so, some people don't know you're going to be there. Like you said, the food was suddenly brought out or mm-hmm. you're in the back of a restaurant, no stage, no mics. And so it's really, those can be super tough.
They can be super tough. And they've been some of my favorite, like, kind of experiences and stories. Because it's one of those things, like, every show makes you stronger,
right? Oh, for
right?
sure.
Like, if it's a good show, if it's a bad show, mediocre show, like, you learn all the time from every show that you do. And the show that's probably the weirdest, Bill Bartel and I did a show on a bus.
On a bus?
On a bus. Like, just between seats, you know? And I'm a big guy. So it's like, the two of us basically standing there, you know, nose to nose doing improv scenes.
I don't understand. Why were you on a bus?
It was like a private show.
Okay.
And
was it like a bachelor party going from bar to bar in a bus? Is that what you mean?
No, it was like a company. It was like a company outing.
Yeah.
And we were up near Green Bay, I'll say. I could be wrong about that. And we were driving to Milwaukee.
Okay.
So I would say it was close to like a 2-hour drive.
Okay.
So I think Green Bay might be a little farther than that. But they wanted entertainment because, like, they were going on a, like, brewery tour in Milwaukee.
Okay.
But they worked near Green Bay. So they drove us up to Green Bay area. And then it was actually two buses. Eric Price and Tim Higgins were on one. And Bill Bartel and I were on the other.
Okay.
And Bill and I ended up having, like, a really fun show. Like, we just ended up having, like, where everyone on the bus was into it. We had, like, microphones. And at an hour, Bill was like, thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll be up here.
Yep. Then we just sat down and waited till we got back to Milwaukee. And it was just that thing of, because if you can imagine, like, you have no room to move. But we're still doing, like, blind line. You know, we're still doing, and because I put on headphones and just blasted music so I couldn't hear
the suggestions. I've never heard this. I love it.
Yeah. Because I've done like shows on boats and.
Sure.
And that's fine. It's a little odd because you're rocking back and forth, you know, but it's always interesting when you do shows in people's living rooms or
done
basements.
That, yes.
Yeah. Where you have to take off your shoes.
Right. Come on in. Hi, I'm Mrs. Patterson.
So all that stuff, you just, like, learn. And like I say, you just, that thickens your skin of just, like, feeling. Because it's like, you can drop me anywhere. And it's like, once you've done a show on a bus, it's like, I'm up for the challenge.
You've done it,
like,
man.
Yeah.
You've hit it. That's the big time. So how do you come back from, and it changes over our time doing this.
Yeah.
When you first begin and you do a crappy show, it might be for different reasons. Maybe you're intimidated by the people who played for a while, mm-hmm. or it was a weird audience, or you just weren't feeling it.
Yeah.
To now, when you do a show that you might not feel so great about, you have a way of bouncing back from that.
Sure.
How do you do that? How do you bounce back from those moments where you're like, oh my God, what am I doing?
I try and remember that improv is disposable. So it exists in that moment. That's mm-hmm. why it's so important to like focus and live in it yeah. while it exists.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to exist again.
Right.
So you might as well enjoy it for better or worse yeah. when it's happening and make sure. The best of it. So it's like if it's a great show, mm-hmm. excellent. Well, it's over. Okay.
Yeah.
If it's a bad show, too bad. But
it's done.
It's over.
It's
yeah.
done.
All shows come to an end. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it is that important element of making sure that we're doing the best we can. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is sometimes it may not always be your best,
right.
but as long as you try your best,
be. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
then you're solid. You know, it's just like one of those things, like it's so easy when you start off to, and I still do it. I'll get stuck in my head thinking about, oh, I could have said this.
Sure.
Oh, I could have supported better
yeah.
or, oh, that was a setup and I missed it or
yeah.
this and that. But ultimately, like the more shows I've done and just kind of this concept of how huge the universe is, mm-hmm. right? And how small we are,
right.
that it doesn't ultimately matter.
Right.
So make the best of it. And, you know, comedy is subjective.
Sure.
Not everybody's yeah. going to find everything funny. But as long as you do your best and
yeah.
do what you can, I think that being confident and supported mm-hmm. is important. You know, be confident, but humble. And be supportive but assertive.
Yeah.
So it's those
oh,
kind
love
of,
it.
Yeah.
Well, and you've gotten into the education realm at Comedy Sports. You've taught
yeah.
for years.
Yeah.
You've taught workshops. You've created new groups and
yes.
kind of coached new groups and done new,
yeah.
different kind of shows. So talk about your improv education philosophy. How do you go about teaching a room full of people? Maybe it'd be 101, people who've never done this.
Yeah.
Versus you're pulling together people who you've done this a while and you want to make a new team. Talk about your philosophy on this, education and improv.
So much of it stems to like how, like if we're talking like 101 or like high school leagues,
mm-hmm.
the most important thing is building a safe environment
yeah.
where you can be creative,
yeah.
where you can feel free to like try something and it's okay if it fails.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something early on when I was in the advanced class, Eric Price brought in Mundy Carter. And
nice. Yes.
he just so talented.
What
so
happened to
nice.
That guy? Where is he?
This I do not know.
Okay.
I didn't know him very well.
Oh, he was great.
He is, yeah.
Yeah.
And he was like, we should celebrate, like in a workshop environment,
yeah.
he was talking about, and maybe his thought would be in shows too, but in the workshop environment, he's like, we should celebrate the failure of a scene just as much as we celebrate the success of a scene. Because it's like, we're trying something.
Right.
We're putting ourselves out there. And that should, we should never feel bad about that.
Because you have to learn from it.
Correct.
I mean, that's
correct.
True. You know, I'm a teacher. That's true. I
yeah.
want my kids to fail so they learn from it.
Yeah.
But they're afraid to fail.
Right.
So I like that philosophy of let's celebrate it.
Yes. Yeah. So I try and bring that element to
yeah.
it. And I believe like anything that you need to give a note on
mm-hmm.
or like, oh, quote unquote, like correct a behavior, whatever like
yeah.
that, it can be done in a positive, supportive way.
Right.
And that's really important to me, that everybody feels it's okay to fail.
Yeah.
But also it's like encouraging the creativity and the successes just, you know, it's all important. You
oh,
just
for
want
sure.
people to feel good about it. Because we do this whole thing to... because it's something inside of us that we want to share.
Yeah.
So in order for that to grow, there needs to be some nurturing and there needs
yeah.
to be that element
yeah.
of it. And the more you grow and the more you learn, then you can start like kind of figuring out more about improv. I think there's a learning curve of like 5 years with improv.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just my opinion.
Okay.
I'm just like, I think it takes you 5 years before you start feeling like yourself on stage, you know, kind of your strengths,
sure.
your personality, what you're good at. Like it takes that 5 years to really hone in on who you are.
Yeah. So what do you think has changed since when you started doing this back in, you said like 99?
Yeah.
till now? I mean, obviously you have changed because you're human and we all grow and change and learn.
Yeah.
But what's changed, like, you know, when you see newer players come up, what do you see that's different?
I see that there's an element where they're more comfortable in taking a beat on stage. Like, it's okay to have that moment of silence, of feet planted in reality a little bit. I feel like when I started, like, scenes would, like, boom.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be at 60 miles the moment it started, you know?
Right.
And now there's kind of, like, that focus, like, okay. And not that it wasn't there before.
Sure.
But just, like, taking time, like, let's set up our who, what, where.
Yeah.
Figure out our characters and jump into the game.
Yeah.
And I think that's just, like, as we evolve and, like, away from, you know, joke per second.
Yeah.
Where it's just kind of like, no, we can build to those bigger laughs. Like, there can be a payoff in building in, like, you can build a little bit of tension within a scene before you just, like, hit the joke. Because comedy sports, it is. Like, you want a lot of jokes mm-hmm. in there in scenes. And you want to be careful of, like, because jokes can, like, sabotage a scene in a way.
Yeah.
So you have to be careful of, like, the timing with that. And
sure.
you have, like, split seconds to decide what's
it's
happening.
It's quick thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So through all the things you've done and learned about and taught and played with and videos and writing and everything you've mm-hmm. done, what is your dream show? If you could go, whether it be the Comedy Sports Arena or any sort of theater, what is your dream show? Do you have an idea of something you would do that just you've been kind of thinking about, batting around, that hasn't been done?
I kind of did a dream show.
What was it? Talk about.
Which was called Band Reunion.
Okay.
So I got some of my favorite improvisers together who I've known for quite a while.
I must have been busy that night.
And you were very busy that night.
But
they were also musically inclined. Like Rolly Cafaro.
Oh, yeah.
He's great on piano. I had Mark Redlich.
Oh, guitar.
On guitar.
Yeah.
And we got together and did an improvised band reunion. Right?
Oh, my God.
So we met and, like, built the Bible of the band beforehand. And we wrote riffs, so we kind of knew what it was.
Nice.
And then we just got, like, song titles from the audience. But we would be like, who's, you know, who's a super fan that remembers the B-side of album, you know, so-and-so. And then whatever they tossed out, it'd be like, yep, that's right. That's right. Mark, you remember that one, you know? And then we would just start, and then he would make up the lyrics.
Improved music.
Yes.
That's incredible.
And I kind of put the team together, but that was, you know, like, Mark Redlich's so great at that. Like, he's talented musician, quick improviser. So it was a joy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, like, I daydream about doing shows where, In a similar vein of just, like, let's get a group of just fun people together and put on a show.
Yeah.
You know, and have it be this rotating thing. And we can do different types of long form. We can do a short form game here and there or whatever. So I do mess around with that in my head, trying to figure out how to present that and make it unique enough to pull in crowds.
Right.
Because that's always my biggest struggle is how do you get people in the door to see these various shows and projects.
And now there are so many different groups and so many different shows. I mean, years ago, it was just comedy sports.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Or an offshoot like the Alewives, the Dead Alewives, or the Midnight Show. But it was just comedy sports and various stand-up around town. But now you hear about all these different shows that people are trying. I think it's a super fun time to be doing improv and trying things. And like you said, who cares if you fail? Learn from it and, you know, try something else.
Yeah.
That's the number one thing that I think you're amazing at. You'll just keep trying stuff.
Oh, thank you.
And having fun. I think it's great. What's your favorite game at comedy sports?
My favorite game.
What do you love to play in a show?
I always enjoyed replay.
That's
replay.
Yes.
Yeah. Because you get to just kind of stretch muscles that there's no really other, well, there's other games that I suppose you could, because you can kind of mix any game together, I suppose.
Sure.
But, like, that thing of like, okay, try and do this in this kind of movie style, or try and do it with these emotions. And I just love the challenge of that.
So there's a setup scene, and then it gets replayed multiple times with different suggestions.
Yes.
What's your favorite endowment to do? Is it emotions? Is it accents? Is it, what's your most comfortable?
I like the things that I don't expect, if that makes sense. Like, if we get a theater style that I'm not quite sure of.
Yeah.
And it's kind of up to my interpretation.
So you like the challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Which is awesome that you've reached that point. But yeah. I think it's always been in you. You've always liked pushing the limit and figuring things out.
I do. I think, like, because it's one of those things where that's where it's nice to have, like, if you're doing a replay and it's kind of like, okay, give us three different animals. And then it's like, well, okay, how do you work those animals into this scene?
Right.
If it doesn't go that well, it's like, okay, well, give us three emotions next.
Right, you let's know? Try something else. It will work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The great thing with comedy sports is there's these elements built in that we know after doing it for years, like that work,
yeah.
You know? So it's kind of like, let's not go to those right away. You know, the challenge of it is what I find rewarding. And I think an audience, you know you're making it up.
Yeah.
And I think often they'll appreciate the more you challenge yourself to do something. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they do.
Mm-hmm.
I think they appreciate it. And then when you succeed, it's just so great for them.
Right.
They're like, oh my God, they did it! That was so amazing. I put some strips of paper in front of you here, Mike. Before we end, we're going to play a couple games here with you.
Perfect.
I want you to pick two of these. These are all different comedy sports games.
Oh, okay.
As our listeners may or may not know. I want you to pick two and tell me which one you'd rather play.
A two. Okay.
What do you got?
I have foreign movie.
Okay.
And I have Oscar winning moment.
Oh, talk about those.
Talk about those. Oscar winning moment's a weird one because you know how games like will go through, all of a sudden you don't see a game for a long time, and then all of a sudden you see it like
all the time.
All the time.
Yes, they go through. You're right.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like, so Oscar-winning moments, like, I have no problem playing it.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel, I get anxious with it because I feel like there's such a pressure on be funny now. You know, where it's kind of like you're doing a scene and then all of a sudden, like, Christine.
Yeah.
Oscar-winning moment. No. But it's like, Christine, be funny.
No.
You know, be dramatic and funny. Like
at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's a scene and the ref will yell out, Christine, Oscar-winning moment.
Yeah.
And then I will have to go and create this Oscar-winning moment in the middle of the scene.
Yes.
Happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Those ones that put you on the spot.
Yeah.
When it's just you, as opposed to knowing your team's around you. They're still there, but you're right. Yeah. Kauf, now, funny. Yeah.
Yeah. So I always find that to be a little create anxiety. Because, like, I can't help, like, anytime one of my teammates or someone even from the other team, like any improviser I'm with, anytime they're like up at bat, I want them to hit a home run.
Right.
Like I'm so rooting for them. I want them. And like, I just want them to feel good about what they've done.
Yeah.
You know? So that's where the anxiety, it's like, I want you to feel good about the Oscar-winning moment you did. I want you to feel good about the scene.
Yeah.
Like, because all that, like, just, it makes me feel good. When I see someone score.
Yes.
That feels good.
Yes.
Yeah. And foreign movie, I enjoy foreign movie with an audience volunteer.
Yeah.
Like, that's my favorite thing to see, again, them succeed.
Sure.
Like, you bring them up, and then it's kind of like, okay, the play is, let's get the volunteer the ball.
Right.
Let's make sure that they get the ball and that they score.
Yeah.
And the whole time, like, even if, of course, the players are getting laughs, but ideally it's facilitating that volunteer.
Right.
So that's my thought on those games.
Which one would you rather do?
Well, I guess out of these two, I asked for a redo. But
you'll like them both. You'll do anything.
I think Oscar-winning moment might work better for the podcast.
Well, we're not literally going to play it.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Just if you were doing a show.
Oh, okay.
Which one would you rather go to?
I would do foreign movie.
Foreign movie.
Foreign movie, yeah. Even though, like, I don't think I'm strong at it. I think I'm very much a utility player in this game.
Okay.
Like, I feel like I'm okay. I'll push story and plot.
Yeah.
And set up the, like, if I'm translating for the volunteer, I'm going to set them up mm-hmm. to do things that'll get laughs.
That'll get laughs.
But yeah.
You're very good support on stage. You're one of my favorite people to play with because you're calm, you're supportive, and you do. You want everyone to succeed. You want everyone to hit that home run. I think that's great. Mike the Mouth Cow. Where did the mouth come from?
Yes. So when I first started and they asked me for a nickname, I wrote down Banana Seat.
Banana Seat.
So I was Mike Banana Seat Cow, right?
You just pulled it out of the air.
Yeah. Okay. And I was just like, all right, I don't know. Because I hadn't put any thought into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly, they may have said it way, way back, but Angelo Farina made up that nickname. He was just like, ah, no, Mike the Mouth Cow.
No,
like,
it's not Banana Seat. Not good
the
enough.
Mouth. He was just like, that has a good ring to it. I was like, great. And so that just stuck. Like he just one day introduced me as Mike the Mouth Cow.
That was it.
And I was like, okay. Great. And it felt like an honor for Angelo to do that, you know?
Well, that's what's great about nicknames. Like, you can't make it up for yourself. It has to be given to you.
Yeah.
And so I like that. You're right. An honor from Angelo Farina, RIP, that he gave you a nickname. All right, Mike, pick two of these Would You Rather cards. We really want to get to know you now. Would you rather?
Would you rather fall face first into a pile of dog doo? Or eat French fries that were deep fried in sweat? I guess I don't know whose sweat it is, but I wouldn't know, so I would probably just eat the French fries.
You'd eat the fries, huh?
Yeah.
Sweat and all.
Yeah, I don't want to fall face first into a pile of dog doo.
It's not your scene.
No.
We're going to try something new with you here before we take off here, Mike. You're the first person I'm trying this with. Something we did long ago at Comedy Sports, the old Game-O-Matic.
Yeah.
We very rarely did it. Sometimes it was go to the bucket as a captain and just pick a random game out of the bucket and play it. But Game-O-Matic is where we would get a suggestion from the audience, and the team would have to make up a game on the spot.
Hmm. Yes.
I think you're the one to be the first.
You are the one.
To make up a game
on
the spot.
Make up a game on the spot.
Are you ready?
You are the one. Okay. Yes.
I'm going to go to my word draw app that Kyle, the brains behind the operation, put
talented
on my phone.
Fellow.
And here we go. I want you to click next, and the very next word is your suggestion for your game. What is
alarm.
It? Alarm. You're creating a game now. With alarm is your suggestion.
It's just alarm. Okay. I know it already.
Now don't take a real game and pretend it's new.
Oh, I will not.
All right, because I'll know.
I will not. The game would be you get a suggestion, you start doing a neutral scene.
Okay.
And
one team?
One team.
Okay.
One team is doing it, three people. And every time the ref blows the whistle, it's like an alarm is going off.
Okay.
And you have to come up with an emergency that you have to take care of right away.
Okay.
So then you take care of that. And then at any time, even on top of that emergency, the ref can blow the whistle
there
and
could
a
be
new
another.
Emergency
okay.
yes, occurs.
So it's a scene game.
It's a scene game.
With random whistle blows saying you have to bring in an emergency.
Yes. That heighten the scene with an emergency.
Nice.
And ideally, nothing too tragic.
So it could be a silly emergency.
Correct.
Give me one emergency.
One emergency. Oh, no. All the zipper flies in the world have disappeared. People are stuck in their pants. Gotta get them out.
Oh, my God. What are we gonna do?
Oh. I had a big lunch. I can't get my pants off. Oh,
oh man. Mike Kauf, it has been a pleasure talking to you on this podcast. You continue to amaze me. You're a phenomenal performer, a great educator. You're a great thinker, and I appreciate your time.
Well, I thank you. And I haven't played with you very recently.
I know.
But I've adored every time we've gotten to play together.
Oh, thanks.
You are a clever improviser, a fun improviser, a physical improviser, that you can get laughs just as much verbally as you can with just making a face.
I do some faces. Thank you.
Excellent. And I hope we get to play together very soon.
Thanks. Me too, Mike. Thanks for coming. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
Bye.
The Comedy Sports Podcast is produced and engineered by Kyle Hannikin. Our announcer is Mr. PJ Rockwell. Feel free to like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. Comments and inquiries can be sent to the Comedy Sports Podcast at gmail.com. Created and hosted by me, Christine Rolo Capriolo. See you next time.
The Comedy Sports Podcast is an independent production made by CSC Players. The views and opinions expressed by the podcast host and any guests are their own and do not represent the views and opinions of any CSE location or CSE worldwide. Vocabulary used by the host and guests is not necessarily representative of the CSE brand.